grateful to be with all of you in this great city of Kolkata, to speak on this beautiful subject I've been given, the power of intent. And I would like to especially thank all of you for being with us. As I was sitting and offering a prayer to my beloved spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, a thought came to my mind, a beautiful example of the power of intent. A seed was planted in the great city of Kolkata. In 1922, on the rooftop or terrace of a very small building, one out of hundreds and thousands of big buildings in Kolkata, a young man who had just recently been married and had a first child named Babai Charan. The first time in his life met who was to become his eternal guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When Babai bowed down before Srila Saraswati Thakur, before he could even get up from his bowing position, he was given an order. You are an intelligent young man. You should spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in the English language all over the world. Is that something you tell someone at the first moment of your meeting, before there was even an introduction to exchange names? So the Prabhupada at the time was a very sincere follower of Mahatma Gandhi. He was part of that revolutionary movement for Indian's independence. He said to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that who will listen to our message if we are a subordinate, ruled over nation? First, we should gain independence. Then, India will have a platform to speak to the world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, politics are always changing. Who rules, who's in power, who's subjugated. But there is an eternal truth that cannot wait for anything to change. That eternal truth is that we are eternal souls. Najayate mriyate vakadachi. The Atma, the soul, the living force, is never born. It never dies. It is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, such an abode. Mamayam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are all part of God, part of Krishna. And our deepest instinct and our highest potential is to awaken the love of God that is within us. When we love God, it is like watering the root of a tree. Our love extends to every part of the tree, all the flowers, leaves, and twigs in the form of every living being in all of creation. That is the Sanatan Dharma. That is the eternal occupation and the greatest need within this world. Unless we address this problem of the disease of avidya, or ignorance of who we are and what is our relation with God and what is our true relationship with each other, then whatever solutions we make to the problems in this world, it is only cosmetic. It is not sustainable. If you have a disease in your body, it creates boils. It is important to treat the boil. But unless you treat the root cause, the blood disease, and even if the boil goes away by medication, another one will come, and another one will come, and another one will come. We stop one war, and there's another war. We treat one crime, and there's another crime. The need is a change of heart to realize who we are. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasauchitina Kamsha. When we realize our own eternal nature, the platform of Brahma, then we become peaceful. We become joyful. Nasauchitina Kamsha. We are no longer dependent on temporary pleasures for our satisfaction. Sometimes hankering for what we don't have, and other times lamenting for what we don't have, or for what we lose. To be satisfied with it. Boundless body architecture, to experience that higher taste. Of loving Krishna, loving the absolute, all attractive, beautiful object of everyone's love. That is what everyone wants. That is what everyone needs. But through this material world, to being subjugated to the weapons of mass distraction, we are constantly distracted from what we really want. And we're chasing after so many mirages in the desert of this existence, not knowing that the real oasis is within ourselves. He explained these things. He said, this is the eternal need of the soul. People are living and dying without understanding the opportunity of the human life to realize our eternal relation with God and be liberated from all these dualities. Now is the time. So the Prabhupada listened. And he was convinced. He was convinced that Lord Chaitanya has sent to this world a suitable person to spread his message. It was at that moment that Srila Prabhupada accepted him as his guru and accepted his order as his life and soul. What was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura's intention? He had the intention of compassion. Out of his love for people of all castes, of all religions, of all sectors of society in India and throughout the entire planet Earth, he gave this instruction to this young, newly married man. And Srila Prabhupada took that intention of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura and made it his intention. He had a responsibility with family, and to raise children, had a job as a pharmacist. He worked for Dr. Bose's laboratory here in Calcutta. He had to go to different parts of India. And eventually, when everything became right time in 1965, he returned from Bombay to Vrindavan. And Vrindavan, actually, he came to Calcutta, to the King George Dockyards, where he boarded the MV Jalajita. For a 38 voyage across two oceans and three continents. In $7, in those days 40 rupees, and he didn't know a soul outside of India. The seed of that intention of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was planted in his heart, and it remained within his heart for 43 years before he got on the boat to execute. Imagine it. A seed laying, apparently latent, for 43 years. And finally, when he came to New York, he was living in a ghetto called the Bowery because he had nothing. The alcoholics, the homeless, the drug addicts, who was living among, they knew this man is a scholar and a saint. And they opened the door for him. And gradually he had students who were in their teens and early 20s. He was 71 at the time. And at the age of his grandchildren, he served them. He cooked for them. He preached to them. He appreciated them. He loved them. And through that love, he empowered them with his intention. With the intention that he received from his guru and meditated on for 43 years, now he was sharing that intention of compassion with his own little students. And these people would eat meat every day of their lives, would only take Krishna prasad vegetarian. They had boyfriends and girlfriends all over the place. Some of them became celibate or got married to be faithful to one husband and one wife. People who were taking marijuana, ganja, hashish, LSD, practically like they were drinking water, they took vows of no intoxication. They didn't gamble. This youth of America who never even heard the name of Krishna. By the power of Srila Prabhupada's intent, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's intent, they accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surrendered their lives to him, and went out all over the world to open temples, to attract tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands of people. Today there's about 500 full temples. This power of intent established with millions of devotees and hundreds of millions of Bhagavad Gitas distributed by people who didn't even know where India was. When I had my calling to go to India from an island of Greece, I didn't know where India was. I had no map. I just had faith. If I keep hitchhiking overland in the eastern direction, someday I may land up in India. How is it these people, they don't even know who, and they never met an Indian in their life before they met Srila Prabhupada, and now they're giving their lives and souls
They're wearing robes in New York.
And they attracted the respect and the dignity of the people. The power of intention. The intention was love. The intention was the manifestation of love as it enters into this world. Not far from here is the Bhakti Bhavan, which was the home of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for many years. He wrote that when love for God, love for Krishna manifests within the world, within the heart, then it spontaneously, naturally expresses toward the people of this world compassion. The real test, if we have any love of God in our heart, is how we are humble and compassionate. Not just toward the people of our own race or our own religion, but toward all living beings. When Srila Prabhupada was on the Jaladuta, he wrote a beautiful prayer. He wrote it to Krishna. But later on, one of his disciples found it in an old trunk and asked Srila Prabhupada, "Can I show other people this? Can we publish it?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Oh, you found that? It's still here?" And Srila Prabhupada was praying to Krishna. He had just had two heart attacks, seasickness, he had no money, he didn't know anything. He was going to a foreign land in 1965, New York City. Most of us would be praying, "Please have somebody waiting for me when I get there. Please have some food and a place to live. It's very cold in winter. Please restore my health." He didn't pray like this. What was his intention? "Please give me the words to speak to them so they will understand your message, my Lord, because I have no power myself." His intention was not to take. His intention was to give. Because the greatest power in all creation is love of God and compassion toward all beings. And God sees an intention. Srila Prabhupada wrote that the Supreme Lord does not see just what we offer to Him. He sees the purpose, the intent in which it is offered. This is a foundational theme of the Bhagavad Gita. The setting is the Kurus and the Pandavas are assembled on the great Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. And Arjuna asks Krishna, his chariot driver, Bharata Sarathi, "Bring my chariot between the two armies. I want to see who is assembled." And what did Arjuna see? On one side was Guru Arjuna and his military. And the other was Yudhishthira. What was the difference between Arjuna and the Pandavas and Duryodhana, Dushasana, Shakuni? From a material perspective, they were doing the same things. Duryodhana was fighting with a club. People was fighting with him. Duryodhana was shooting arrows. Arjuna was shooting arrows. Duryodhana was organizing military strategies. Yudhishthira was organizing military strategies. They were doing the exact same things. So what was the difference?
Very changed.
Duryodhana was motivated by envy, greed, and excessive arrogance. Yudhishthira, Arjuna, Pandavas, they were motivated by dharma, by devotion and love for God, and the will to actually lead the people of the world with compassion in the right direction by their actions and words. There was a vast difference between Duryodhana and Arjuna. In actions, they did exactly the same thing. The difference was in their intent. This is a constant theme in all great spiritual literatures, throughout the world, throughout history. In Ramayana, there was a great battle between Ravana and Jatayu. Not far from Mumbai, about 5 hours away, is Panchavati or Nasik. And in the outskirts of Nasik is Tarkate. That is the jungle setting where Jatayu resided. After Ravana in Nasik, that place is called Sitaharana, where he kidnapped Sita in the most cowardly way. He sent Marichi, one of his assistants, to attract Rama and Lakshman to a distant place. He disguised himself as a sadhu and stole Sita. As they were flying overhead in his mystic airplane, led by asses, Sita called down to Jatayu, "You are old. Do not try to fight. You cannot win. But tell Ram which direction I have gone." Jatayu was very old. He didn't have a chance. But what was his intention? "I cannot sit back and allow injustice to happen." Ahimsa doesn't mean you sit back and let people be abused. Real ahimsa is our intent to protect the innocent. He jumped up right onto Ravana's back. Started fighting. He had no weapons. He's an old bird, a vulture. Ravana had bows, arrows, swords, knives, choppers, hatchets. He had mystic powers where he could create all sorts of illusions. And all Jatayu had was his beak and his wings and his claws, his tail. He fought with his heart and soul. At the beginning, he was winning. He had such an... It wasn't his strength that was winning. It was his will, his intent that empowered him so much. But ultimately, because of his old age, Ravana took his sword, cut off his wings, cut off his legs, and he lay there in a big puddle of blood. Sita, with tears in her eyes, she embraced Jatayu. "You have given your life for me. All my blessings, all my gratitude to you." Ravana dragged her away. Ram came after some hours, and he understood what Jatayu had done. He placed that old vulture's head on his own divine lap, bathed him with tears, embraced him, and said, "Jatayu, on this day, I will send you to my Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Because of your devotion to me, you have attained the supreme perfection of liberation, the ultimate goal of life. Chanting the name of Ram Jatayu passed from this world and attained the spiritual realm. From the material perspective, Ravana was the son of a Brahmin, Vishwava. Jatayu was not even a human. And among birds, the vulture, it's quite a low caste. Ravana was victorious. He won the battle. But please, take very seriously the words of the Gita. Krishna told Arjuna, do not be attached to success or failure, honor or dishonor, happiness or distress, victory or defeat, because these dualities are always changing. It's the nature of the world. Real success is not if we win. Real success is based on our intent, because that's what God sees. Krishna told Arjuna, if you fight with the intent of love and devotion toward me and compassion to others, then if you win, you will rule the world and lead everyone to liberation. And if you lose, if you die, you will attain the perfection of liberation. So what is the loss? Real success in this world is in the dignity, the integrity of our values. Not in what we acquire. If we acquire things due to greed, immorality, unnecessarily causing harm to others, that's what Duryodhana did. He cheated. He lied. He was envious and greedy. And for many years, he won. The Pandavas were living in exile in the forest, and he was ruling the whole world in a beautiful palace with incredible power and fame. But who cares? Because he's gone down in history as a loser. A person who maintains real values and integrity even in the face of temptation and fear, that is success. That is victory. And to sustain that integrity on the basis of our devotion to the Supreme Lord, that is bhakti. That is the highest path of perfection. Yes, Krishna told Arjuna, and he told the whole world through Arjuna, the real success is your intention. And the actions and words built on the foundation of that intention. Atapun Girvitas Treshtas Varana Shrama Vibhakasha Swarushkitasya Dharanasya Samsagya Haridosha. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells that real success, whatever our varna, whatever our ashram, whatever our status in life, whatever our occupation, whatever sex, whatever nationality, whatever it may be, is according to how we please the Lord. If Krishna is pleased, we are supremely successful and our life is perfect. If Krishna is displeased, it doesn't matter what we acquire. And this the sincerity of our devotion, of content that pleases the Lord. Yes, Jatayu lost the battle but won the ultimate war of life. What a beautiful example. And after I finish my talk, I believe there will be a drama on the life of Jatayu. Within this book that I wrote, The Journey Home, there's a certain passage where I learned this lesson of the importance of our intent. There's an old analogy that there are two dogs living in every one of us. A good dog and a bad dog. This analogy is parallel with the example in Bhagavad Gita that within every heart of a conditioned soul there is the divine nature and the demoniac nature. We have these two voices, the voice of reason, love, devotion. The good dog is teaching us to be humble. The bad dog to be arrogant and proud. The good dog to love, the bad dog to hate. The good dog to be tolerant and forgiving. The bad dog to be vengeful and envious. The good dog to try to see the good in others. The bad dog to just try to see the faults, to build oneself up. We're attached to so many things. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave a very, very graphic example. People in this world are very attached to prestige, to adoration. It's very deep-rooted. The only way we can uproot it is we take that same tendency to appreciate the glories of God and others. And that's so beautiful. We don't get anymore like, we don't need adoration anymore. If it comes, it comes, but we do the right thing. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said the prestige of this world should be seen the same way we look at the dung, the stool of a boar. How many of you have touched, tasted, or smelled the stool of a boar? Raise your hand. I didn't touch it, but I smelled it. Because it's just my nature. I'm kind of a crazy person. When I hear an analogy, I really want to get as much realization as possible. So I was in the Himalayas, I heard this, and there were wild boars around, and I happened to see a boar, and he happened, as I saw him, he happened to be doing just that. I'm sorry about this, Lord. I didn't intend to. That's an horrible power of intention, maybe we tell it. Anyways, it was fresh. It was a cold day, so it's kind of smoking. It was warm. And what does Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mean that we should see the prestige of this world the same way as we perceive the dung of a boar? So
so I actually smelled it. I'm not going to go into any more detail. But I'll tell you, go ahead and try it, and you'll have another perception of what it means to be attached to the prestige and adoration of this world. See, boars eat the same stuff that comes out of them. So it's especially very, very powerful. But to praise God, to see the inherent divinity in other people's hearts, is like tasting the sweet nectar of the lotus. Parandrasvani Vartate. Once you taste that, you're no longer attracted by the raw things that are the sources of misery in this world. And that is the great opportunity of this human life. So we have these two dogs, and they're both calling for our attention. The good dog is trying to help, is telling us to savor, serve without selfishness. Perform your sadhana, purify your heart, access love, be an instrument of that love. And the bad dog is telling us, enjoy, acquire, get it, and do it. Don't care about all these other things. And according to which dog we feed, that dog's going to become very strong and bark very loud. I think we have this realization. This propensity for envy and greed and lust and anger, arrogance, illusion, sometimes it barks really loud. That's my natural propensities coming out, I'm sorry. I don't get a single clap. this shows something. When the bad dog comes out, everybody appreciates it. She looked up and said, if a person barks just like a dog, people will clap. But when a dog barks, everyone goes, hut, hut, hut. And the good dog, oh, the dog, bad dog, the good dog is. You don't even hear it. He's so tired. And he's so neglected. He's so hungry. He's so neglected. Which dog is going to win the battle within us? The one we choose to feed by the choices we make at every moment. By the power of our intentions and the actions that are based on those intentions. William Blake, a great American poet, he wrote, a truth told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. A truth told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. Even if we tell something that is literally true, if our intention is selfish, envious, to cheat, to harm, that truth can cause more harm than all the lies in the world.
the foundation of the world is based on each person's intent. So Tyre, by the power of his intent, he was liberated. And even ages later, we are glorifying and doing dramas to glorify. Robin's intent, yes, he had a city made out of gold. But to this day, ages later, people hate him. He was ruined. We must be the good guy. Even if it appears we have something to lose, because ultimately we will. The world is going in such a bad direction. The economy is collapsing in so many parts of the world, in Europe, in America. Not because of lack of money or lack of resources, but because of greed. Because of arrogance and greed. There's an environmental crisis that the greatest environmentalists are telling us, if we don't drastically change our values, there is going to be disasters beyond comprehension. From an environmental perspective, what is the cause? Greed. Pride. We want to exploit. We take from Mother Earth and we give back toxic waste. How long can that be sustainable? Here in India, the Yamuna River, it begins in Yamunotri, high in the Himalayas. And according to research, it's all diverted somewhere in the state of Haryana, every drop of it. There's many miles of just a dry riverbed. And then, the governments and people, they just put canals of sewage to fill up the riverbed. And that's what flows through Vrindavan and all the way to Prayag. And there are tens of millions of people drinking that water, bathing in that water. It's sewage. What kind of ecological disaster is that? All that's required is a little bit of integrity to just redirect the water back. But greed, desire for power. On so many levels, this world is really going in a very dangerous direction. In the name of God and religion, there's killing and hating and terrorizing. It has nothing to do with God. It has nothing to do with religion. It only has to do with the bad dog. But you see, this bad dog can bark in the name of God and declare, this is what the scripture says. Kill, hate, judge. It's not religion. Simply envy and ego putting on a false guard. You are all the youth. Since time immemorial, people have turned to India for spiritual solutions. And at this time in society, it's very clear that the real solutions is not the development of our technology. It's the development of our spiritual qualities. Then we can utilize the technology to do good to the world. Science, technology, economic progress, it's strength, it's power. But it'll only do good to the degree that the user, the person who utilizes that power, is good. A knife, if it's in the hands of a thief, it kills an innocent person. If that same knife is in the hands of a surgeon, it saves the life and cures an innocent person. Is the knife good or bad? It's all based on the power of our intent. This is the teachings of Bhakti of the Gita. Everything is inherently potentially spiritual if we have the right intent. We could use this microphone to enlighten people's hearts by glorifying the Lord and by inspiring values. Or we could use the same microphone to inspire hatred and violence and envy. Is the microphone good or bad? It's potentially either one. Science, technology, engineering, business, money, wealth, fame, talent, all these things inherently are godly if our intent is godly, or they're potentially dangerous if we are not godly. When I was young, the greatest entertainers was a rock and roll band called the Beatles. Whatever they did, whatever they said, became the fashion for tens of millions of people, practically a whole generation. The lead guitar player of the Beatles, George Harrison, became a devotee of Krishna. He was ready to give it all up and just serve my Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada told him, this is not the teachings of Gita to give up. The teachings of Gita is to utilize. You're a married man, live with your wife peacefully and give a good example of how people could love God in marriage. You have beautiful talents of a musician and you have incredible fame. Use your guitar, sing your melodies, and enlighten people with love for Krishna. And people will listen to you. And he did. And he wrote songs that introduced literally tens of millions of people to Bhakti, to Krishna. And thousands of people changed their lives. Ekalavya Guru is a very good trumpet player. And he sings very nicely. He's playing his trumpet to inspire love of God. Therefore his trumpet, it's like a modern day conch shell. It's invoking auspiciousness because of the intent of his heart. Yes, that incident that took place in 1922 here in Calcutta. Is what brought up all of us together here today. According to the Shastras, at the beginning of creation, Krishna
or Narayan. He imparted the intent of the purpose of creation to Brahma by revealing the Vedas within his heart and the conclusions of the Vedas. And through Parampara, Brahma, he taught this knowledge and the intent of the Lord to his son Narada, to Vyas, and it came through a whole chain of disciplic succession. And 500 years ago, the Lord himself appeared to revive this great knowledge of intent. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharanasya tadatmanam shujamya. Krishna explains the intent of why he incarnates in this world. Out of love, out of compassion for all of his children, to teach us the way to live where we can be happy and liberated. And the great gurus of the world, they have adopted that intent. And they live with that intent, the intent of the Lord. There's nothing more beautiful. So please, in these very troubled and very transitional times of human history, the youth of India, who are educated with so many incredible talents, who know how to speak the language of the world, who will be leaders in so many fields of the world, if you have the right intent, the right guidance, and live accordingly, you have the power to make a great change in transforming humanity and our planet. Take it seriously. That's what makes life beautiful. When inside we know we have a fulfilling and meaningful purpose. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came with this intent that everyone, whoever they are, has the chance to be an instrument of spiritual change and attain perfection. And he made it so easy. Live with character. Associate with holy people. And chant the names of the Lord. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Hare.
The purpose of this chanting is to transform our values and to actually empower us that everything we do, everything we speak, and even eventually our every thought will be motivated by love, by compassion, where we are tasting such an ecstasy that we want to share that ecstasy of prema bhakti with the world. This is the intent in which we cultivate our hearts in chanting the holy names. In Siberia, It was people from another religion who were very unhappy that bhakti movement of Bengal, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they thought was actually spreading so much and affecting so many people, so they became insecure and they influenced the government to ban the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is not simply Indian. The mission of Lord Chaitanya is not simply Bengal. It originated, it manifested here in Bengal, but it's universal. It is Sanatana. Savai pung sankara dharamo yato bhaktir bhakshati avaitati akrati hathagi atma sutra sutati. The supreme dharma is not just being Christian, Muslim, Jew, Parsi, Jain, Sikh, Hindu, Zoroastrian, Buddhist. The supreme dharma is to awaken the propensity within us to love God and to live as an instrument of that love. Aham nija pratapita, to understand that Krishna or God, whatever name we may use for the Lord, there are many names of God, is the father and mother of every living being. To serve the Lord without any selfish intention, without any egoistic motivation, and without any interruption, no matter what may come before us, that is real religion. That is Dharma. That is what the Bhagavad Gita teaches. The universal spirit, which includes all the great spiritual paths of the world. But some small-minded people, because they were sectarian, the world is a mirror of our own vision. The world is a mirror of our intentions. That's another power of intention. If we're envious, the power of that intention is we'll see envy everywhere. If we're sectarian, we'll see sectarianism everywhere. So they actually went to the courts to ban the Bhagavad Gita. Many of the most powerful politicians of India, industrialists, educators, they contacted the Russian government because they were outraged. And in the courts, the ban was lifted. Bhagavad Gita is one of the most important, greatest literary works. The word of God for the whole world. And that was ultimately declared in the courts. So what was an attack against gave more publicity to the Bhagavad Gita. What could have taken decades otherwise. Does that answer your question? What do you want? Is there any other questions? Can select who you give microphone. But then you are also responsible. How do you
like? Good evening, I'm Shulvik.
Good evening.
I've heard that about, you must have heard about Swami Vivekananda. There is no relation to this topic, but I would like to know more about Rajas and Tamas, which has been mentioned by Swami Vivekananda in relation to the youth of India. Can you please enlighten me on that? It has been, I believe, it has been mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, Bhagavad Gita explains Daivi Yeshu Namaya Mama Maya Durakura Mame Vanya Prabhupada Maya Prabhupada. Gita tells that there are three modes of nature. and activates the whole world. Everything within this mortal, temporary world can be evaluated according to how it is affected by these three modes of nature. They are called gunas. Another definition of guna is a rope. We are bound by these ropes and dragged by these ropes. Guna also means a quality. Sattva guna is goodness. And the Bhagavad Gita explains, what are the qualities of goodness? To be unselfish, to be compassionate, to be humble, to be forgiving, to be loving, to be moral, to be clean. Rajaguna is passion. To be greedy. To be very much attached to the results of what we do. To have excessive desire to enjoy. Enjoy the senses, enjoy the mind. And the objects of the senses. Tamaguna is ignorance, avidya. The qualities are lethargy, cruelty, envy. And according to the Gita, almost everything we do can be categorized according to tamaguna, rajaguna, or sattvaguna. The Gita explains food. Food that is the cause of pain and bloodshed to another living being is tamaguna. Food that is too salty or too hot is rajaguna. Food that is wholesome and fresh and conducive to good health, physically, emotionally, that is sattva. But beyond the modes of nature, there is, Krishna tells in this verse I quoted, when we take shelter of the Lord, we go beyond the modes of nature. But we can only go beyond the modes of nature to the transcendental state from the mode of goodness. If we take food in the mode of goodness and offer it to Krishna, it becomes prasad. It's beyond karma. Sattva-guna creates good karma. Rajaguna creates mixed karma. Tamaguna creates very bad karma. But when we do something in harmony with the will of God, it is beyond karma. It's a result of liberation and love. Similarly, charity. When we give the wrong thing to the wrong person at the wrong time, that's charity in the mode of ignorance. Even if we have a good intent. Because if we really have a good intent, we have to have knowledge to make sure we're doing the right thing. Yes? Charity that is primarily for our own purpose. I give something so I become famous, so I get tax relief. That's rajaguna. Charity that is genuinely for the welfare of another living being without selfish intent myself, that is sattva-guna, the mode of goodness. But when we uplift someone spiritually, when we give them knowledge, when we connect them to the grace of the Lord, that is para-upakara. That is the supreme charity. Because we're helping actually to deliver a person from birth and death forever. By spreading God's name, by spreading transcendental knowledge. In our work, if we're working and we're using the results of our activities and we're trying to get those results by envy, by causing harm to people, by promoting intoxication, illicit sex, slaughter of animals, That occupation is in the mode of ignorance, kind of.
If our occupation is because we want more and more money, we're not trying to hurt anybody, but we just, we want a lot of things, and we're trying to get it, without unnecessarily causing immorality.
That's logical.
If we're actually living by real spiritual standards, and let us say moral standards, and we're working with detachment. Detachment to the results, but we work really hard with values. That is suffering, the moral goodness. But when we're working like Arjuna, or like Jatayu, in a spirit of devotion to God, trying to work in the spirit of God's bhakti with that intention, and whatever we gain, we use it for the spiritual upliftment of others, that is bhakti. That is beyond the modes of nature. You see, from another perspective, goodness represents preservation. Rajaguna represents creation. Tamaguna induces destruction. Yes? So in this world we have to be creative. So Rajaguna is there. We have to balance Rajaguna with Sattvaguna. If we don't balance Rajaguna with Sattvaguna, then it will naturally deteriorate by being influenced by Tamaguna. And when we balance our creative energy, our passions with Sattvaguna, and then we learn the art of devotion, bhakti-mama-bijanati, of offering it to the Lord with devotion, that is the perfection of yoga. Yogi namapi saradisham markete mantara. Then we are freed from the ropes of the molds of nature. And we actually taste paramitya anandam guribharata. The ecstasy we're always looking for. That ananda of Prema Bhakti. It is given to us. It is revealed to us.